Hi, I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Shortbox Showcase.
Episode 49, Shooting the Breeze.
So our plan for this episode is going to just be a sit-down, a fireside chat, if you will, about our geeky holidays, a little bit of a look back, some look forward, and a little bit of feedback.
Wait, that's a dirty, stinking lie, and you know it.
Oh, yeah. First, we have a lot of feedback.
And we start with our buddy Mark Sweeney from I'm the Gun. And he said he was going to have to give our Convergence episode a re-listen. Just picked up the whole shebang very cheaply, but have yet to dive in. I expect some unevenness, but some of the talent involved. Whoa!
It's true. Just the lineup and the character pitches alone. Really,
I think that's what made it work for us.
It's worth the price of admission.
Especially if you pick up the whole shebang very cheaply.
That is always endorsed by Relatively Geeky Productions.
And then we get to, surprise, the topic that will not die. How we nerds organize our comics. And although we've heard from many of our awesome listeners on this topic, I have to say I was a little disappointed that podcasting's Michael Bailey had not chimed in yet. Now, know that he listens to his podcasts by banking them show by show. And then he sort of Netflix
binges
on so he'll binge Fantasticast and then binge us and then back to the bins and rolls through his subscription list. So that's the way he does it. But anyway, he had made a comment on Facebook that he wished he had listened to our episode sooner so he could contribute to the conversation. But we reminded him that we love getting feedback on prior topics, prior episodes. So we strongly encouraged him.
Peer pressured.
To talk about how he organizes his books. Borderline bullying, but not quite.
So Michael writes, Alan and M, I am making my way through the last few months of the Relatively Geeky podcasts, and Shortbox Showcase 44 is on as I type this. Your subject of how people and organizations organize their comics has been fascinating, and since my name was brought up specifically, I thought I would write in. Right here at the top, I want to make something perfectly clear.
I mean, technically, that does not count as cyberbullying. I mean, we bullied him, and it was in a cyber format,
but we know him. It's different.
It's different. Okay, just checking.
Right here at the top, I want to make something perfectly clear. I am insane. Not legally, but most people look at my collection and wonder what the heck is wrong with me. There is a method to all of this, and hopefully that will become clear as I go through this. So first off, unlike at least a couple of our friends, he is one step ahead in the recovery process.
He knows there's a problem.
As he points out, Superman collectors have a particular cross to bear. From 1991 to early 2002, the Superman titles were all connected by a triangle numbering system. Superman, the Man of Steel, led into Superman, led into Adventures of Superman, led into Action Comics. For years, I kept my Superman books in that order, with the 1987 to 1990 books filed in an approximation of that system.
Mm-hmm. They had started interconnecting the books before they formally did the triangle. So he's got, about 15 years then of these books organized in this system.
When they stopped the triangle numbering system, I had to make a decision. Keep filing in that order or split everything up. I chose to split everything up, and thus I began a strange trip down the long and winding road of how I keep my comics. To be fair, I could just alphabetize everything. I could also do the same, but split things up by company. I ultimately went with something that is a bit complicated, but works wonders for me as a reader. I like to keep my books together by interest and character. As you might imagine, it all begins with the Superman comics.
Because as Michael often says, it all goes back to Superman.
The Superman books start with the main ongoing Superman books, filed by title chronologically. First, you have Action Comics, followed by Superman, which turned into Adventures of Superman at 424, and then back to Superman with 651.
My head is already hurting just a little bit.
Keep it together. Michael files all of these together since the numbering is continuous.
Sure.
Then the second volume of Superman that began in 1987. Then Superman the Man of Steel, and then Superman the Man of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Annuals are filed at the back of each title, because that's how the first comic shop I ever went to filed their annuals.
Okay.
Then I have specials that were published during the Triangle era by year. After that, I have the new 52 titles, again, chronologically. Action, Superman, Superman Unchained. This is followed by the various Superboy books, split up by volume. After that, I have the team-up books in order of title appearance. World's Finest is followed by DC Comics Presents, is followed by Superman slash Batman. Then, I have the new 52 team-up books. Batman slash Superman and Superman slash Wonder Woman. Then there are the miniseries and specials. Then you have the various volumes of Justice League when Superman was a member. After that are Superman family books filed alphabetically. So you have Jimmy Olsen, followed by Lois Lane, followed by Steel, Superboy, and eventually the various volumes of Supergirl. Then things get weird.
No, whoa, whoa, whoa. Michael, we got some news for you. It's pretty weird already.
This is the level up. I consider the Legion of Superheroes and the Fourth World characters to be spinoff of Superman since they premiered in his world. So I put all of my Legion books after the Superman and Superman family titles in order of volume. Then I have all my Fourth World books filed in chronological order. Then other books where Superman-related characters were members, such as the Outsiders and the Titans. Finally, I have all of my event books, anchoring the Superman section as he was part of 99% of them. My Batman books are next, and they are split up in a similar way. Then Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, and Green Arrow titles by volume. Then all of my non-Superman-related Justice League books, then the Titans, then the JSA-related books, followed by the rest of the DC books in my collection.
You know, I'm thinking, why would he have such a messed up way of keeping his comics?
Well, that's how I read them. If I'm on a Batman kick, I don't want to have to search through the B's, D's, R's, and so on. Same with my Justice Society books. With the sheer number of comics I have, which will shrink by the end of next year, but still, having a flat alphabetical cataloging system would mean searching through several rooms and going all over the house to find the book that I wanted.
That makes some sense. I think there is a difference between the collector and the reader mentality here. And Mike is organizing based on the reader mentality, the ease of usage mentality, for him to find the book and to conveniently read the books that he wants to read, as he said, if he's on a kick of X character.
And to bring this back to the episode that originally spawned this whole topic in the first place, a lot of that episode I spent ranting about how libraries and academia simply don't know how to handle comic book organization, citations. They just don't know how to handle them, what they are, how they should be stored or cataloged or shared or displayed. They just haven't got a clue. So I really like Mike taking a cue for how to catalog his collection, not from card collecting or stamp collecting or something like that, but from his comic store.
Mm-hmm.
How does the comic store organize it? Because they are professionals. They know how to make this work.
Not a bad way to go.
As Michael continues, convenience rules my collection. Or laziness, or some combination of the two. My trades have a similarly weird filing system, mostly by character. But again, I'm pretty sure he has way fewer trades than he has
individual issues. Probably.
So a weird, wonky system in your trades, you know, it's a bookshelf, maybe two or three, not a literal entire library. Michael closes his email by saying, anyway, I don't know if that made any sense. It made as much sense as anything else does. I'm also in the process of trying to figure out what to do with my Rebirth books. Superman is pretty easy, but Action Comics is proving difficult. Because what happens when Rebirth ends? At the moment, I am leaning towards putting them after the new 52 books and crossing those bridges when I come to them. Thank you for another great episode. Regards, Michael.
I hadn't thought about the books like Action. that lose their numbering only to have the legacy numbering restored. And as much as restoring those numbers to Action and Detective pleased longtime DC fans, it did add an additional organizing
complication.
Issue. Yes, exactly.
On the somewhat related issue that I brought up a few minutes ago about citing mm-hmm. comic books in academic papers, Tom Panarese had a few things to say.
Hello, Middletons. I listened to the feedback portion of the Wonder Woman episode, and that spurred me to go back and look through a paper I wrote for my honors senior seminar, entitled The Perpetuation of Myth in Literature and American Popular Culture. That's a fancy way of saying I wrote a paper that was partially about comic books. Anyway, I used MLA for my citations, and it looks like I simply treated the individual issues as if they were any other periodical, citing issues of Adventures of Superman and both the original Definitive Directory version of Who's Who along with the Loose Leaf edition. Where no writer was available, I listed the editor and referenced specific issue numbers with their corresponding dates, and that seemed okay with my professor. Interestingly enough, I referenced Crisis on Infinite Earths in the paper, and since I had the brand new, at the time, gorgeous-looking slipcase hardcover edition, I used and cited that edition as a book with a footnote on the citation that explained that I was citing a collection that was originally published as a 12-issue series.
Footnotes are your friend.
By the way, I wrote this paper in the spring of 1999, and my professor thought I was nuts at first and said so in his comments on the paper. But that garnered an A-, and I consider it the crowning achievement of my undergraduate career. I don't know what that says about me, but then again, I have one published paper, and it happens to be about Degrassi. So there you go. Always love hearing you two talk about anything, and I'm looking forward to future episodes. Best, Tom.
Looks like you got a real pop culture affidavit there.
Professional buzzkill. Nathaniel Wayne wrote in to defend his negative take on the Wonder Woman theme, Is She With You? It's not an objectively bad piece of music, however, nothing about the music says Wonder Woman to me. Not a single lick of it. I'm a fan of electric stringed instruments. I had the joy of seeing Lindsey Stirling in concert this past summer.
Okay. Slowly getting back in my good graces. Good job, Nathaniel.
But an electric cello doesn't make this any less appropriate for Wonder Woman. It's like Trent Reznor composing a Superman theme. It's just a bad marriage.
See, and maybe this is just me. I would actually be very interested in a Trent Reznor Superman theme. But that's just me. I think we learned from that feedback is just that Nathaniel and the two of us just have very different views on Wonder Woman and what makes her essentially herself. We talked about a book that had, you know, all of these different variations
right.
versions.
And mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of things that have been Wonder Woman and a lot
right.
of things that Wonder Woman has been and represent her, I don't know, her perfect, ideal, essential, platonic self. But I don't know, especially for the kind of like aggressively badass, modern, ancient thing that they're going mm-hmm. with in the DCEU, I think it works really well.
And his Lindsey Stirling fandom does buy him a little bit of grace.
It actually does buy him a lot of points back. Like, well, okay, yes, welcome back.
Now, Nathan also had an interesting take on our Rebirth coverage from last episode. Just finished your Rebirth coverage. Firstly, I'm amazed you're willing to put up with more than one of my rambly emails, especially when the stated, repeated goal was to dampen your spirits on a number of items.
You know, I'm glad that you tried, because we are still super pumped.
And yes, I'm more of a trades guy in general, okay, because he'd said he had like one long box of comics or something. And more of a borrowing guy of late, thanks to having friends willing to lend. Plus, Liz, my co-host on Punch Like a Girl, is actually a librarian, so she's able to get hold of things that my local library sadly doesn't stock, which is kind of like a superpower.
It really is.
Nathaniel says his relationship to DC has always been peripheral. I don't see ever really getting too much into the latest reboot, That said, it makes me smile to see that DC finally seems to be listening to the fans. They appear to have gone out of their way to antagonize for the last 5 or 10 or 15 years, depending who you ask. I just hope that this revitalization filters through to the movies and animated projects, since those are things I'm more likely to consume regularly. I'd really like them to be good, or in the case of animated films, to be good again.
Well, Young Justice is coming back.
True.
So there is hope still. And Justice League Animated looks really good and cute. I follow Doc Shaner on Tumblr, and he's loving it, of course, because Shazam is like one of the top 5 build characters of the Justice League. Highly recommended.
My only worry about this is that Warner Brothers generally operates their subsidiaries as separate silos where there isn't necessarily a lot of interaction between the different lines of business. So much of their Superman licenses, like backpacks or sheets and wallpaper, folders, drinking glasses, those are still based on the pre-52 classic looks, for example. So it's possible, though, as we said, that the relocation to the West Coast may enable some closer workings between comics, animation, TV, and movies. You never know.
It's
you hope the good ones influence the bad ones and not the other way around. You never know how that's going to shake out.
Well, I mean, we were here for the New 52. Honestly, it was hard for them to make things worse. In last episode's feedback section, while discussing Vera Wild's take on Luke Cage and geek-sploitation, I expressed a few quibbles that I have with the show Chuck, and the irredeemable Shag wrote in with some questions about that. Because, though he agrees Big Bang Theory tears down geeks, he thought that Chuck elevated them.
I'm a middle-aged white male, so I'm not in tune always with feminist issues. I'm trying to pay more attention to these areas, especially as my 10-year-old daughter gets exposed to more pop culture. I thought Sarah, from Chuck, was pretty cool, as a very independent and awesome fighter. Admittedly, they used her sex appeal every chance they got, and more gratuitously as the show went on. Just bear in mind who is typing this email. I am the irredeemable Shag, so you know I'm going to say, she's hot. I also recognize that given Sarah's training, she should have saved the day more often than Chuck did. I love the show and the characters. Beyond that, I'm curious to hear Emily's concern. I'm not arguing, I'm just admitting I'm probably blind to whatever concerns she might have. Emily, the floor is yours.
Really, it's the sex appeal thing that just really, really, really bothers me, because Shag's right. Sarah was a really interesting, highly competent, great character. And she was actually a kind of rare example of a character that we don't get to see, which is the kind of stoic badass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she and Casey were very similar characters.
Right.
And you really, really don't often get a female character who's a lead who has that sort of emotional distance.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, and of course, that was a part of the whole show, was
right,
her building relationship with Chuck and their budding romance and all of that stuff. But even then, you could really tell, and this goes to the actress, because Yvonne Strahovski is like an amazing actress, and I love her. The way that she interplayed this sort of internal emotional struggle that Sarah was going through was great. It was brilliant, and I loved it. And yet, the directors just could not stop ogling her at every single opportunity, and that it just really, really, really frustrated me.
Let me push back just a little bit and say that the glamour shots of her were totally over the top. But there was a wind machine blowing every time she entered anywhere. However, everyone else was treated over the top as well. Casey was over the top. Big Mike was over the top. Jeff and Lester were over the top. So sort of everyone had one personality trait, and it was turned up to 11.
And that's
part of my defense.
And any time that it was played for comedy, it was amazing. There's one fight that like sticks out in my head as just like one of the funniest things that they ever did, where there was the evil secret agent undercover girl who was like the Euro girl, and it was while Sarah's cover was the Wiener Hut. And so there were the two of them in these really slutty, like terrible outfits, desperately trying to kill each other with implements that they found in a fast food restaurant. And of course, as the fight is going on, two or three or four more just like schlubby whatever dudes were sort of wandering into the restaurant and getting out their phones. That was hilarious. Anytime that it's Sarah's walking in and you can literally hear the boots were made for walking and the wind machine goes and it like zooms in on Chuck's face and this is clearly all happening in his head. Great. Fine. Hilarious. Wonderful. But it was just things like she would be in a fight and suddenly she would fall up against a table and oh look, her boobs just so happen to get pushed right up into her face. Oh, she's going to be tied up and her arms are pulled right next to her boobs so that they stand out an extra cup size larger. Or, oh, we're going to climb through an air duct. And of course, she's not wearing a shirt that goes up over her boobs. You got to be able to see all the way down her cleavage to her navel. That stuff frustrated me so much. Really? I think it's just because I have seen it done better in Parker. You know, I've watched Leverage now and I've seen Parker and had a hyper-competent, notably very attractive, rather sexual character who everybody acknowledges is really hot. People are like interested in her and she's doing all this stuff and yet not being used for gratuitous sex appeal. That now going back, it's more just sort of like an that really wasn't necessary. You could have just kept playing this for humor. Been like, isn't it hilarious how all of these dudes just see her as a walking pair of boobs? Let's show you how she's more than that. And she's not just a walking pair of boobs who kicks things. Like,
but it seems
she has emotional depth.
It's not just that the characters were viewing her that way. You think the show, at least over time, began to view her that way as well.
It's the gaze. It's like, genuinely, I blame the director and only the director. The actress did nothing wrong. The writers did nothing wrong. The actors, the other, like
the
male cast members who were performing with her did nothing wrong. I really just think it's the director. It was just gross. I didn't like it.
Thank you. Now, during that rebirth talk last episode, we wondered about the character of John Diggle and where he originated. Darren Sutherland was the first person, of many, to set us straight.
Well, I mean, we did ask for this.
That is true.
We asked, and we don't have a forum. So
this is the forum. So Darren and Ruth, of course, host the creator-focused podcasts Warlord Worlds, Xenozoic Xenophiles, and Trekker Talk.
FYI, the character of John Diggle was indeed created for the TV series Arrow. His name comes from Andy Diggle, who wrote the comic series Green Arrow Year One, which is a major influence for the plot of Season One.
Right.
Plus, John Diggle's brother on Arrow is, in fact, named Andy.
So there is an Andy Diggle on the show.
It was funny because, of course, I knew about the show first before I read any sort of recent Green Arrow comics at all. So whenever I would pick up Year One...
and it would have Diggle on the cover?
It would say...
the name Diggle?
Yeah.
I see what they did here.
But I thought that it could have possibly been like the John Ostrander option where his first appearance was as a character because a friend...
Paul Kupperberg was writing and put him in as a character.
Right. Yes. And so I was like, it's possible that there could have been a, let's have a character named Diggle, and then six months later, Andy gets assigned to the book. But it is indeed the other way around.
Thank you.
Darren continues with some more broad thoughts about DC Rebirth and the DC Rebirth initiative.
We're so thankful that DC didn't reboot Aquaman with Rebirth. It was the best reboot in the New 52, and I'm glad DC acknowledged that by leaving it pretty much alone. Green Arrow Rebirth is terrific, so much better than the mess that the series was during the New 52. Loving most everything about it.
Same.
Wonder Woman Rebirth is equally great. The writing and art are perfect. We've been reading Blue Beetle Rebirth on the recommendation of Tim Wallace, and it's good fun. Let me interrupt to mention that Tim runs the Blue Beetle blog, Cord Industries, and is getting a Blue Beetle podcast up and going called, of course, Beetlemania. I mean, it's like once you get the name, you have to do the podcast. That's our rule. That's what we've discovered. Back to Darren and Ruth, they said that the Young Animal line is great. We're loving Doom Patrol and Shade the Changing Girl, and Cave Carson is our favorite in the line so far.
Well, it has to be.
He has a cybernetic eye!
Right?
I have heard from others that Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye may well be the best of the Young Animal books.
So Darren and Ruth mentioned Aquaman in their response, and we did not talk about Aquaman in our episode.
Whoops.
So superfan Daniel Butcher had something to say about that. Yet again, the Sea King completely absent. The fans of Superman get some love, but what about the friends of Aquaman?
Now, I replied to Daniel that the Aqua fans like to complain a lot, but those guys got a great Aquaman in Brave and the Bold.
If it is to your taste,
to say nothing of the new 52 version. So, no complaints allowed.
The Irredeemable Shag wrote in about Rebirth and also mentioned the John Diggle information. He started his broad comments about Rebirth saying that he enjoyed the episode and welcomed us to the dreaded full price society. Now, to be fair,
it is the 20% off society.
Because we do indeed have a pull list and thus a discount.
It's a start. It's something. Shag says, yes, Detective Comics is loads of fun because it's not a Batman book, but a Bat family book. This book has recaptured my 1990s love of Tim Drake and Spoiler.
Excellent.
For goodness sake, go buy Superman. After years away, I came back to the Super books with Lois and Clark, stayed for action, and then fell in love with the Superman title. Plus, issues 10 and 11 serve as a warm-up for the Super Sons series, so they are a must-read. Super Sons is on the pull list.
Yes, it's pre-ordered and ready when that starts. And, as we mentioned on that episode, Hoopla has some deal with DC. I just got an email that said, simply, Rebirth is coming. So,
we'll have our chance to catch up. Teen Titans, Shag says he wanted to hate this book. Had no interest. Picked up the Rebirth special somewhat snobbishly just to confirm my continued hatred for what DC has done to the Teen Titans since 2011. But dang it, I'm really enjoying it. It's the most surprising one for me. For now, they're getting my money each month on this one. The Titans. I'm biased on this one. I hate the art. Don't care much about Roy since Cry for Justice. This Donna Troy is lacking personality, and so is Garth. However, this series has my Wally West. So again, I can't help myself.
Hey, provided that they give Donna Troy some decent characterization and set Roy's hat on fire,
it'll be okay.
Then they might be able to convince me to come back.
Back to Shag. Trinity, as you discussed, surprisingly good. Then again, Francis Manipal is amazing. Under a different creative team, not sure I'd stick around. And, answering a question that I had, Deathstroke. I read the Rebirth special in the first three issues. It was somewhat entertaining, but not enough to keep me around.
Once again, I'm just hearing Hoopla. Hoopla. Read it for free.
And then he mentions the Hanna-Barbera stuff. Future Quest, my absolute favorite comic each month. So much fun. We also heard from Clinton Robison from the Coffee and Comics blog and the upcoming Coffee and Comics podcast.
He writes, Middletons, giving up on Nightwing after the Rebirth issue? Okay, I'll admit it wasn't as much of a Rebirth as some others, but you can't fault Nightwing for picking up where the previous stories left off while praising Hellblazer for essentially doing the same, though in better style, I will concede.
Yes, we can. And we did.
Why am I so up in arms over this abandonment of Dick Grayson? Because the whole first story arc is about how we get Dick Grayson back to where fans want him. Not to be too spoilerific, but we get to see Dick compromise his principles, question where his loyalty to Batman's ideology ends, and the influence of Spiral begins.
Okay.
We get to see him decide exactly who he is now, and where he wants to go. I'm not saying go back and buy the issues, but at least give the first trade a fair shake.
On Hoopla.
Although, if you do want to try single issues again, the one where Dick talks to Superman is a really good start. After all, we head off to Bloodhaven right after that, and we know how well having his own city works for Nightwing. This is the thing, is I'm sure that it's great. Much like the Aquaman rebirth,
right.
The Hellblazer rebirth. It's continuing with the good things that were going on beforehand, mm-hmm. and I totally understand that. I just personally wasn't interested in what was going on beforehand. So,
taste is taste.
Taste is taste. I'll give it a read and just sort of see what's going on. I am glad that Nightwing is getting a fair shake in comics again, even if I'm not buying the book.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton continues, I have to admit, I think you two are missing a few other gems from the Rebirth line. But if anybody understands that not all tastes are the same, it's definitely me.
There we go.
However, I suggest paying attention to pretty much any Superman-related title, Aquaman, mm-hmm. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, Detective Comics Superwoman, and yes, even Titans when they hit Hoopla. I mean, it's not going to cost you anything but your time and a small bit of annoyance at me for having suggested you take time to read all of that. Oh, and as for the Deathstroke question, it's pretty good. Honestly, not my highlight issue, but it holds up. I will say it's probably better collected than being read issue to issue, though.
There we go.
Hope we get a Rebirth reading update from you both in another 6 months or so to see where things stand by then. Also, Scooby-Doo Team-Up is my happy place of comics. It is just so much fun.
There were a lot of recommendations for Superwoman and or Detective, and I'll talk about this on the Comics Reading Journal, but a lot of people recommended Scooby-Doo Team-Up, and I've read the first 6 issues. They're awesome. I've asked Clinton if he's read Scooby Apocalypse, which is another one that I've heard shockingly positive things about, but he hasn't tried that one yet.
Well, there is something about being given a property that you don't have to create any of the characters of the world and just being told, go crazy.
Scooby-Doo Team-Up is so, it is so 1970s. It's Scooby-Doo and it's the Super Friends. It's that era of DC.
Good.
The inside jokes are hilarious. The stories aren't bad themselves. It is a treat.
Ace the Bat-Hound.
Ace the Bat-Hound. Bradley Null wrote in saying how much he loved that Watchmen was the birthplace of where DC finds themselves today.
There is something shockingly metatextual and cosmically true about that.
So we're definitely looking forward to seeing where that Watchmen connection leads to. And I think that's going to be this summer. We're going to get a little bit more of that at least.
Probably. We also heard from Mike Laughlin. Dear Professor Allen and Emily, after listening to your most recent Shortbox Showcase, I realized how nice it was to like DC Comics again. I no longer have to avoid comics starring some of my favorite fictional characters. I've gone from reading 5 DC books pre-Rebirth / Hanna-Barbera Revival / Young Animals to reading 17. If my budget allowed, I'd probably be reading even more. He then proceeds to pick his top 10 DC books. 10... All-Star Batman. Batman and Two-Face go on a road trip. Everyone's trying to kill them. Scott Snyder's premise is awesome. I'm not sure where it's going, but I am enjoying the ride.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
9 Green Arrow. I have been waiting to read about the Oliver Queen developed by Neil Adams and Grell for years. He's finally back. Cool-looking art, great supporting cast to round out an entertaining comic.
Now, on this one, Neil Adams has been doing the alternate covers. And I understand that coming up, Mike Grell will be back doing some covers. I assume they're going to be the alternate covers, and I'm assuming he's going to be replacing Neil Adams in that role, but I don't know. I just know that Grell will be back on Green Arrow covers coming up, and that is a good thing.
You know, because we
may have to specifically request that at the comic shop to make sure those are the Green Arrows that we get.
Yeah. We've been enjoying the Neil Adams covers. Mm-hmm. I think we've probably got 65%.
Yeah, I think we've got most of
them. The variant covers, because sometimes the other covers just look prettier. Yeah. But we almost are always grabbing the Adams covers. But I mean, Grell.
Come on.
Come on. Number 8, Detective Comics. Cass is one of my 3 favorite DC characters. Seeing her acting like herself is enough to get me reading this title. The real surprise is how much I like Clayface joining the Bat family.
Oh, I had not heard about that. I just heard that Detective is really good.
I am intrigued.
Interesting, interesting.
Number 7, Unfollow. I'm enjoying the stories of the various characters and how their lives change when receiving obscene amounts of money from an eccentric tech billionaire makes them targets.
Interesting.
6 is Shade the Changing Girl. An alien takes over the body of a mean teenage girl and has to figure out how to live her life only better. This series is my favorite young animal comic, bringing back the 90s Vertigo feeling, but without the goth. You know?
That's a good way to put it.
I am here for goth. I am also here for goth-free Vertigo.
Fair enough.
Number 5, Wonder Woman. As good as you said it is.
Yes.
I really don't think it's possible to be hyperbolic about Wonder Woman. It is pretty much perfection. Number 4, Astro City. Kurt Busiek, Brent Anderson, and capable guest artists produce a high-quality series that is always good.
Yeah, Astro City has been a blind spot for me for a long time. I think last year, 2016, I read my first Astro Cities ever, maybe 5 or 6 of them. And that's got to be something I put on my to-read list.
Got to make that a goal.
It's a highly thought-of series. The few issues I've read are terrific. And I've just got to read more of it.
Number 3, Future Quest.
There we go.
I have little connection to the Hanna-Barbera action heroes, but this series always leaves me with a smile.
Nothing wrong with that.
Number 2, Deathstroke.
Hello.
A book I really enjoy featuring a character I don't care about, written by Christopher Priest. I'm having flashbacks to 1998, when Priest made Black Panther Marvel's best comic. Bit hard to follow at times, but definitely worth the effort. And number 1, the best DC book. The Flintstones. Biting satire, great art, smarts, heart, no cloying sentimentality, that equals my favorite monthly comic. I really hope DC's higher-ups don't screw everything up with bad crossovers and editorial interference that resulted in the New 52.
Yeah.
For now, I'm just glad DC has learned from some of its mistakes and gone back to making good comics. Mike Lachlan.
It is crazy how popular these Hanna-Barbera books are. And it's not just nostalgia. It's also that they're really good.
They're really well written.
Now, I can't remember who it was who made a specific comment on these feedback segments that we do. But it may have been Mike Laughlin, so I want to mention it here. But somebody compared our feedback section, which, spoilers, we're only about halfway through on this episode, just so you know. This is not the wrap-up. But somebody compared our feedback segments to the old letter columns in comics in the way that there would sometimes be ongoing fan conversations for extended times, overextended letter columns, month after month. So I thought that was a fun comparison.
You know, I've always sort of laughed about how popular comic books are a thing to podcast about, a solely visual static image medium.
Mm-hmm.
In podcasting.
Yes.
A visual-free medium. But we both have letters pages.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's a certain continuity there. We also heard from Martin Gray, who reported that he was only 20 minutes in, and it was the best episode ever. If you remember, we spent a lot of time talking about Martin last episode. After listening to the whole thing, he said it was an utterly Ginchy episode. I am going to take that as a compliment.
I am chuffed by that comment. And then a day later, he wrote a slightly more detailed feedback. How lovely to hear your views on Rebirth. Emily and Professor Allen, mine are all over my blog, Too Dangerous for a Girl. So, just a few titchy comments here. Is he cursing?
Let's keep this PG, please.
This is clean. Dude, come on. Birds of Prey isn't bad, Martin says, but Babs as Batgirl throws off the dynamic. She needs to be Oracle for this book to work. As is, we have 3 heroes with too many similarities in the way they operate. As regards the new Hunter's costume, which we love, purple and white is always a welcome combo, but the new coat is awful looking. So clunky. Yes, it may be handy for riding a motorbike or allowing her to kick, but visually, it's rubbish. compared to the original version from the 70s, her silhouette should recall the Batman. But here, she looks drab, and I miss the sleek hair. You are correct, Professor Allen. Huntress was the backup in Wonder Woman after a handful of Batman family stories. See? Martin doesn't always have to correct us. Occasionally. Rarely. We evidently get a few things right.
Well, it's okay, because immediately he also corrected us about Diggle appearing on Arrow first.
So, okay. Martin continues, I don't mind Jessica Cruz, but I can't get behind Simon Baz as a Green Lantern carrying a sidearm. Plus, why does DC's idea of human diversity never look beyond the U.S.? Did we mention that Martin's running in from Edinburgh?
No.
However, that may be a topic for a whole episode at some point.
Actually.
International comic characters or
something
to that effect.
I mean,
he raises a good point on this one. I try not to give Martin credit,
but this one. This was fair. I mean, we've already pointed out that in an entire sector of the universe, the only worthy lanterns are found on Earth. And then he points out, not even Earth, Northern America. Yep. Okay. I occasionally...
It's as if Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz weren't worthy until they emigrated to the U.S.
You know,
I'm just saying.
I like to mock Marvel for having, like, a 96% metahuman concentration in New York City, New York State, USA. But I can't give the Lanterns a pass on this one. I just can't.
Martin continues that he quite liked the DCU Constantine book, but was really bothered by the half-mast trousers.
Okay.
What was that all about?
Okay. Now the
John was doing a little too much cultural assimilation.
I think he might have just beat up Tintin and took his pants. I loved the design, but the first time I saw it, I was like, "Huh? Okay, so we have moved from tosser to jockey." Okay, I can roll with this.
Martin said that he loved Starfire, which we still had her book, rather than her suddenly appearing in Teen Titans with pink hair to match the telly cartoon. I was intrigued by the Wonder Woman Rebirth special, but managed only about 3 months of the flip-flopping stories. The origin was just too boring and drawn out compared to the snappy original, and I'd read two or three Wonder Woman origins already this year. Okay, that is fair. They
yes.
are retreading very common ground. Plus, despite Nicola Scott's talent, I don't like her uninked art much. Her Diana has these sappy facial expressions that bother me.
Fair enough.
As for the lies, that's where my interest lay. But I bailed after about 3 chapters of Diana faffing about in the jungle. Again with the language, Martin. Come on! Oh, that's probably not a curse. Okay. And Cheetah being constantly referred to as Barbara Ann, when this version's always been plain Barbara. Okay, I'm not here to judge, but that one seems a little nitpicky on Martin's part.
Okay, to be fair, it also bothered me.
I'm telling. I've really enjoyed the opening arc of Nightwing, and the new Bloodhaven story is shaping up nicely. And just plain dive into Detective Comics, guys, in which James Tynion IV and Eddie Barrows bring Batman family brilliance.
Well, since apparently, spoilers, Tim Drake is not actually dead, my interest in that book and in picking it up and probably buying it in trades rather than individual issues mm-hmm. has seriously probably about tripled.
And he says what we have to try, of course, are the Superman family of titles.
Of course.
Especially Superwoman. But new Superman, Action Comics, they're all terrific. Superman, though, is utterly wonderful. Okay, there is an unfortunate event in the debut issue, but after that, the adventures for Lois, Clark, and John have just gotten better and better. Try the one-shot issue 7 and let me know what you think. Looking forward to more Rebirth reviews as you try more series. Cheers, Martin.
So here's the only downside of DC universally, unilaterally being this good is that we're not going to be dropping anything, but we are probably going to be adding things.
Yes. I know. And back to podcasting's Michael Bailey, who has done a few Rebirth-related episodes on his excellent Views from the Long Box podcast.
I have been anticipating this episode for some time. I wanted to know y'all's thoughts on Rebirth, as you seemed pretty excited in general, as opposed to the specific excitement you felt for the New 52. So my general note is that this was a great episode, and I appreciate your enthusiasm and insight. A handful of specific notes. I went into Rebirth strong, and for reasons I will get to in an upcoming views, I have dropped a number of titles. I stuck with the Superman books, most of the Bat titles, Wonder Woman, Titans, and a few others. The fact that I dropped a bunch of books is not me saying I don't like what DC is doing. It's more realizing that it's not 1998 anymore, and my head is not in the DCU as a U quite as much as it used to be.
No, it's funny because between us, we're getting 6 or 7 titles a month. And for that, that's like a high water mark for us in terms of our buying fresh comics off the shelves.
Definitely for this, well, century.
But for Michael, he may be at, I don't know, 10 or 12.
A
or
mere
15.
10 or 12.
It seems like a really small number, so as it's all perspective and history at work here.
Michael continues, the Superman titles have been amazing across the board. Action is my current favorite, but that is coming from a bias stretching back almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. You put Dan Jurgens on Superman, I am going to like it. Superman has been a very strong title, and I like what Gleason and Tomasi are doing with the Clark and Jonathan relationship. Superwoman is fantastic.
That is what we keep hearing. We did toss out Superwoman versus Supergirl, which I admit is a sexist comparison. It might not be fair, but whatever.
And apparently of the two,
Superwoman seems to be getting the votes.
The clear lead in votes. Supergirl has a rough start, but it's a nice mix of the New 52 and the television series. Trinity is a beautiful comic, and I cannot say enough good things about the idea of Bruce and Diana showing up at the Kent farm to get to know Superman. New Superman is not my thing, but not a bad comic either. You know, speaking of Trinity, I might have to send Michael some fanfic recommendations, because I can hook you up, buddy. He continues, Detective Comics is my jam. I'm backed up with Wonder Woman, but we'll be getting to them soon. He then says, I think M was a little hard on the Superman-Wonder Woman relationship. We have already discussed this two podcasts beforehand with Michael. But he says, I wasn't happy with it, but to characterize it as just a thing that happened and it wasn't all serious takes away from the work Charles Soule and Peter Tomasi did to make that relationship work. As someone that wasn't all that into these characters getting together, I was surprised that both writers took the time to have them talk about their relationship and try to work through their differences. I get that Em really hates the idea of these two being together, and I get that she's happy it's no longer a thing, but to suggest it was, as Alan put it, the quarterback and the head cheerleader getting together does a disservice to the creators that made the best of a not-so-great situation. But I know better than to try to change Em's mind on that score. That is true.
That is fair, yes.
That was my changed mind. That was an, I can accept that that is a thing that has happened in the past, which is a solid step up from what relationship? I don't know what you're talking about.
Nope.
Michael continues, I too am looking forward to Batwoman and Super Sons. I think it's awesome that there will be a Batwoman title and a Superwoman title on the stands at the same time.
True.
He closes out, that should be enough. Great episode as always. Hope you all had a wonderful holiday season and talk to you soon, Mike.
We're going to talk a little bit about our holiday season later, as a matter of fact, but it was solid.
Yeah.
Now, during that episode,
and this one
nonstop, we've mentioned Hoopla. And on that topic, we got a quick note from Azure, also known as Blue Girl. Thank you for introducing me to Hoopla. You've changed my life. My wallet thanks you as well. Winky face.
Our work here is done. Noted Supergirl fanboy Dr. Ange threw in his 2 cents about Rebirth.
I think this Rebirth review episode was done at the right time. Enough issues have been printed to see whether the bloom is off the rose. I was ready for anything but the New 52 and was so exceedingly eager for this new direction. And I've been pretty thrilled with the Rebirth books. It does feel like going home again. The nasty, angry, aloof, stabby feeling of the New 52. It's gone.
Okay, I might just have to print that out. Just nasty, angry, aloof, stabby feeling. Dash, Dr. Ann, to just put that as like a warning label on the back of all of our New 52
exactly.
books at the library.
The Rebirth special was sort of a palate cleanser. And then we got the books. Ange, of course, does focus mostly on the super books in his comments. With Rebirth, we finally have a Superman who is optimistic, unwavering in his heroism, and ready to inspire. And we get Lois! If there's one character who suffered the most in the New 52, and of course there are many, Ange says it was Lois. She was either absent or twisted into someone unrecognizable. She certainly wasn't Superman's girlfriend.
Yeah.
But now we have a smart, crusading Lois back in the thick of it and in a romantic relationship with Cal. Hurrah for Lois!
Same.
Action Comics by Dan Jurgens and others is the Superman book I feel most enmeshed with this new DCU. The Mr. Oz story is most represented here. Luther is a villain, fights in Metropolis. This is where you'll find that sort of story, and it's excellent. Superman by Peter Tomasi, Patrick Gleason, and others is more of the family book, concentrating on the Clark and John relationship. This isn't as tied down to big events. We had issues at a state fair. Okay, you've got me there.
Sold. I need it. I wonder if this is the number 7 single issue that was mentioned.
Could be. And a 2-issue arc honoring Darwin Cook.
Very good.
This one is a rollicking fun time. Now, I know you think I can't be trusted with Supergirl reviews, but if you peruse my site, Comic Box Commentary, you'll see that I applaud the good and point out the bad. This new book is a mishmash between New 52 continuity and quasi-TV show elements. The first arc, fighting her father's attempts to resurrect at Argo City, is really about Supergirl finally embracing Earth as home and putting Krypton behind her. Unfortunately, that trope has been written 3 times already, and that's just the New 52.
But I'm Tish.
I know this might be someone's first Supergirl story, but old fans have read this theme already. Overall, it's being told relatively well by Steve Orlando and Brian Cheng. On the other hand, Superwoman is a revelation. And Ange was nice enough to include a spoiler warning for this title.
Okay, everybody, this is my first time reading that spoiler warning, and let me just say, that is brilliant. Oh, yeah, go read this. Go read this right now.
We'll just say, we will skip the spoiler part and say it is written by Phil Jimenez, so every issue feels like 2 issues, and therefore it might be the best dollar value for you guys. Ange, you know us, man.
He's looking out for us.
It is meaty and interesting. As for other titles, I've also loved Green Arrow and Wonder Woman, also have liked Detective Comics, and Doom Patrol and Shade the Changing Girl are both well worth it. And since he just can't leave well enough alone...
We were almost free. We were almost clear. We were almost ready to go home.
And brings it all back to filing and organizing. Lastly, a new dilemma. You knew this wasn't going to end, right? The DC Rebirth one-shots for the characters and the titles. How do you file them? Is it DC Rebirth title name? Or is it title name DC Rebirth? Does DC Rebirth Superman go in the S-box or the D-box,
or the R-box?
Now then, just a few days ago, Dr. Ange posted a picture of the cover of one of the new Justice League-related one-shots with this question. Justice League of America, The Atom, Rebirth, number 1. Okay, where do I file this in my collection? Is it J for Justice, A for Adam, or R for Rebirth? I offered the solution of just putting it in a short box all by itself. That seemed to be the most logical.
Genius. Joe Crawford suggested buy 3 copies and put one under A, J, and R respectively, since that's what DC would really want you to do. And replied that maybe he could just rest on top of the pile of hair he's pulled out over the years, collectively having to file things like this.
Ultimately, I think the hive mind did land on J for Justice League, but
I think it would be one where if you do not end up buying any subsequent issues, but you buy all of the number ones, count them as a special or an annual and put them at the end of J.
But what if, hypothetically, there could be someone out there who's a big fan of the Atom?
And only buys the Atom ones.
Then, that person's got to put it in the A's with all their
I would put it as a volume, with it being Volume Rebirth after Volume New 52. I hate Volume so much.
I know. We were almost free, but
I hate Volume so much. Put it as a new volume, as issue one of that volume.
In your A box.
In your
after
A box.
After Sword of the Atom and Power of the Atom and New 52 Atom.
Then put this.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor.
Thanks for asking these. The real questions, Ooh. Giving us all anxiety. Thanks.
Now, we are struggling a bit, you and me, with our process for organizing Rebirth. The Convergence books had the huge advantage of all starting with the letter C.
Oh,
it was
great.
Convergence Blue Beetle, Convergence Action Comics, Convergence JLI. That helped. But Rebirth is a little bit trickier, and we've, between us setting up a joint pull list with both of our priority reads in it. So we'll be picking up books that the other one is more interested in on occasion. Who reads them first? Who gets them next?
And then where they live.
You have a couple short boxes at your apartment.
I have one short box at my apartment and two short boxes here.
Oh, yeah. Up in your old room. Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So we have not totally nailed it down, but I think the Rebirth books are going to get their own short box probably filed here.
Yes.
Is it maybe the Hellblazer books for you to read and then store here? We haven't. These are details we have not quite worked out yet.
I think what this is going to mean is we're just going to have to set up like a monthly reading party where we both bring all of our books and just sit down for 2 hours and read everything and
trade,
then put it in a box.
Trade them back and forth and put them in the box and... Crazy. Now, like we said, we warned you. There was going to be a lot of feedback.
And it's finally over. Thank goodness.
So, let's take a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about our 2016-2017 thoughts, some holiday geek things that we had.
And some plans for the new year.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Hi, I'm Tim from Cord Industries, the Blue Beetle blog. I'm here to tell you about an exciting new addition to the Silver and Gold family of podcasts. The show is Beetlemania, and it focuses on what is arguably one of the greatest superheroes in all of comics history, Blue Beetle. From the adventures of Dan Garrett the cop in the 1930s to Dan Garrett the archaeologist in the 1960s, from everyone's favorite Ted Kord to the more recent adventures of Jaime Reyes, we'll be covering the entire legacy of the Blue Beetle. And I won't be doing it alone. Joining me for this epic journey through the lives of the Blue Beetle will be Jay from the Silver and Gold Podcast. Together, we'll be discussing, reviewing, and celebrating the awesomeness of all of the Beatles. Beatlemania, coming soon to sngpod.com and cordindustries.blogspot.com.
And we're back. And it's possible that I lied.
What?
There's one piece of feedback we held over for this segment, as it does relate to looking back and looking forward. This is more from Clinton Robinson, and it came at about noon on New Year's Eve.
Okay, Professor. So here we are, roughly a year later. I do not see a novel about Catholic vampires, and I do not have a mountainous stack of Emily's Constantine fanfiction. These are easily some of the most criminal attacks on fandom this year. However, in exchange, we all got many, many podcast episodes covering a wide range of topics, totaling several hours of entertainment with a few bits of knowledge sprinkled in there somewhere. And I'd say that's a pretty fair exchange.
Okay, we're not going to rehash all of our new geek resolutions from last year, but we're just going to roll those ones forward into this year, okay? Is that fair?
In preparation for this episode, I thought to myself, you know, we should actually go back and see what those new geek resolutions were. Because you were like, okay, I can come up with one or two. I was like, you know, I can only remember one or two of them. And we picked three each. And we listened to the episode. It's like, so these are each our four.
Oh, no! including ones that we totally forgot we had made.
Yeah.
Whoops.
But you achieved two of your resolutions.
Yes.
Go to Baltimore Comic Con, which I attended with you, which was a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And you went out and you met people and you got to know people and you podcasted more and friended people on Facebook and saw people in like real meat space.
I do want to thank those people who helped me accomplish that last year's new geek resolution of meeting people. Podcasting's Michael Bailey, Stella Bowman, Tom Panpan, Darren Sutherland, Ruth Sutherland, Jim Rimoldi, and briefly, Tim Wallace. And we just missed finding Jason Marcinet at Baltimore Comic Con. And though I'd met him before, I did hang out with the irredeemable Shag again this year. Once a year's about right.
I think so. It's an annual, merely annual tradition.
And that, of course, was with Aaron Bias and Little Russell Burbage as well. So, for me, that counts as an extremely social year.
Agreed. Now, going through my resolutions, there were two that I entirely forgot about, and of course...
So technically speaking, it's not that you didn't. It's not that you failed. You forgot. Trust me, as a university professor, I've heard this excuse before. It's not that I didn't do the homework. I just forgot about it. Oh, okay. That's different.
One of them lacks malice. Now, granted, I did not complete any fan fiction. I did write and post several chapters, and my roommate has been needling me about finishing it. So, over the course of 2 years.
Exactly. We're just extending.
I will finish that story, so we'll roll that one over, along with something I completely forgot about, which was last year's goal to watch new Old Who.
Right.
I completely forgot about that plan. I am writing the checklist today. I am taping it to my computer, and I am going to do that.
Nice. One of my geek resolutions last year was to not get sucked up in the drama of Dawn of Justice, and the way I managed to accomplish that was by not seeing it. That was part of it. Because I found that it was not as angry as Man of Steel was, though there was some condescension happening with thoughts and takes on Dawn of Justice. And I did fear that Wonder Woman would get some of the brunt of the anger, and that did not happen.
No, I think pretty much everyone agreed. She was the best part
of
that movie.
So I do have to give a thumbs up to the fans on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not seen the movie, though I think I probably will this year. You have multiple copies of it, if I remember.
I got suckered into buying the, like, 3-disc
extended.
It was on sale, and it was right there, and Diana was front and center, and the boys were in the background. I had to buy it. I had to. So I now have the extended cut, only on Blu-ray.
We think maybe your roommate might have a Blu-ray player on her game device. We'll see. Possibly. Well, we'll have to investigate.
We'll poke around, but that might be, if last year's resolution was to avoid, this year's might be to confront and experience in a calm and reasoned manner. Embrace. Yes. Not confront, embrace.
Back on the social thing, I know that there are two big podcast meetup things that I know of this year, but I don't think we're going to be able to get to either one.
Unfortunately, no.
There's Star Wars Celebration in Orlando and Heroes Con in Charlotte. I know at each of those, podcast buddies of ours are trying to get big groups of geeks together. But we're doing a major family trip that will probably be discussed on Dorkness to Light, as
actually,
a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Which is a week in Germany. And perhaps a few days on one side or the other in England. So our UK listeners, we may be texting, Facebook messaging you just to see if maybe there's a day we can hang out, possibly.
But any other travel is pretty unlikely.
Yeah, that's
going
to soak up both the family budget, to say nothing of the vacation day allocation. So
yeah.
There's one potential Comic-Con that I have as a possibility because, again, the travel and the lodging would be taken care of. But I don't even want to announce it and say it because, again, it's unlikely with all of the other traveling we're doing. So comic geek travel might be
might
on hold for this year.
But we had a pretty good geek Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Got a good amount of comic books. I got a lot of Daredevil. Got one of Daredevil fighting Luke Cage.
You were here when that Christmas box came from one of our friends.
And you were
may
able-
have been Gregor Ruge. I can't remember who the last one or Rob Lance or.
But you were able
one-
to.
I was
hide
able to
that.
Hide that one because we were going, oh, this is fun. Look at all this stuff. And I think, oh, there are a couple in here I could put under the tree. For. I mean, that Santa might want to snag. And so
yeah.
I did. So that was the Daredevil versus Cage one shot. That was one that ended up in your stocking.
Mm-hmm. And then we got some movies. We got Force Awakens. We got The Librarians.
First two seasons, yes.
The Martian. And something that one of my New Geek resolutions from last year was watch more science fiction. Like try and finish up some of my space opera shows or start some new ones. I watched a season and a half of Farscape. I was pretty proud of that. Watched Zero Babylon 5.
Oh, that hurts.
Did watch 7 seasons of Peter Falk as Columbo, 2 of which I got for Christmas. So,
hello, Bob Fisher.
Shout out to Bob Fisher.
I got the 2 volumes of the Challengers of the Unknown showcase. You got the second Martian Manhunter one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had a little minor thing because you got volume 1 for your birthday. I bought volume 1 and 2 together. And then we were at the, was it Black Friday?
The Black Friday
after Thanksgiving sale.
Volume 2 was.
Volume 2 was there
$5.
And you were thinking, I should really pick this up. I think Santa may already, I've already discussed with, I don't think you need to pick that one up, Emily.
Yeah, it's probably not necessary.
Wink, so. Okay, that one was not a total surprise.
And unfortunately, unlike Volume 1, this one takes place in the 60s. There's a sprite, and I'm gonna read it out of spite. And I got, you know, cool presents from, like, you and Mom, obviously. But my boss gave me cool Flash socks because everyone knows.
Yep. You cannot keep that geek.
That geek flag hidden. It just, no.
In terms of 2017, at least for our podcasting, there are 2 big numbers on the horizon. Quarter Bin 100 is coming this summer.
Oh, and prepare your ears.
And by that I mean all summer. I'm taking the Stella approach to celebration, which is multi-part, multi-hour,
multi-guest.
So coming in June or July, starting in June or July.
Ending in 2018,
will
possibly.
Be the 5 or 6 parts
7
of Quarter Bin 100. And you may have noticed that this is short box 49, meaning that 50 is on the horizon. And like we did for 25, we're planning to tackle a classic, albeit controversial, storyline. No spoilers. We don't make any announcements. That's as close as we can get to saying what's coming up next.
But that is going to take a long time to put together. There's going to be reading. Thinking, reading,
discussing,
notes, discussing,
thinking
some more, rewriting your notes, possibly recording and re-recording, editing, re-editing. It's going to be a process. So this episode might have to tide you over for a little while. It'll be mostly quarter bins, comic reading journals for a little while until episode 50 is in the can.
The lid is roaring and ready to go. In terms of back on to, not necessarily resolutions, but in terms of the few of the geeky things that I want to do this year, it's sort of fill in some of those blind spots. Mentioned Astro City before. That's
Fables.
One. Fables was Giselle. One from last year. That's a carryover. Now that it's done, I want to finish it as well. So there are a couple of very well thought of, highly thought of series that I want to make a lot more progress on. And keep up with Rebirth.
Yeah.
Because reading five or six or... Well, we have six titles, which means eight or nine books, because some of them are...
Double shipping.
That has cut into other sorts of time.
It has. I really enjoyed the last, like, 2 years, where I was really deeply invested in TV and was watching, like, six or eight shows a week.
Live, as they were coming out.
Live, or within a couple of days, mm-hmm. like... keeping up with the ongoing stories of many serialized television programs, I think that is coming to an end.
Yeah, when we're throwing on this many comic books and your podcast listening had fallen a bit aside, that TV may be the thing that takes the hit here in
this
2017.
This time around, that it just, I can't keep up with it. Besides, I'm like... I've got too many old TV shows to watch.
Well, now that you've figured out the Columbo and the Rockford Files and...
Well, even or even Person of Interest, which I was waiting until it was ending. Or Angel. I finished season one. Really enjoyed it. Would love to watch the rest of it. Haven't.
Did you like young little Christian Kane?
He's so tiny! He's so small and skinny. Adorable.
You spend a lot more time getting beat up.
I know!
And the first season of Angel, which is so weird.
It's really weird. I have seen pictures of him from season six when finally he is becoming himself. And is very shirtless.
Yeah. So again, we don't like to promise anything. We're just saying you're more likely to get a Rebirth review part two episode in 6 months than you are the TV catch-up episodes.
Yeah, half semester. The half season, the geek TV roundups, those are probably done.
We will leave that to our friends, Scott McGregor and Chris Tyler, on the Weekly Heroics podcast.
Yes. That is their cross to bear now.
I do occasionally show up on the Fear the Walking Dead cast over on the Two True Freaks, where I talk about mostly Fear the Walking Dead, but occasionally talk about the Mothership show as well, but... That's probably the extent of our TV podcasting coming up.
Yep.
So comic books, and comic books.
Yeah. Finally, coming back to my one true original love. No, I went to the TV shows because the comics were garbage.
Now that is true.
The comics were total crap. And so I went to podcasts, and then there were TV shows that were not crap, so I went to the TV shows, and now the comics are good again. We've said it before, we'll probably say it again, I'm home. I don't need the TV shows anymore.
We got comic books.
I've got Trinity, giving me literally everything I've ever wanted in my entire life.
So thank you for listening to this episode that's mostly about you guys.
Good job, you guys.
We managed to make it not a totally feedback episode, only a 79% feedback episode.
Good goal.
And of course, we totally appreciate your listening and your feedbacking. It means an awful lot to us.
So if you have feedback to send us, you can send it to our email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or you can comment on our Facebook where we post these things, which is relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where we host the episodes. You can comment on those posts there.
And we'd certainly appreciate iTunes ratings or reviews. That helps more people discover the show. And as you learned during the feedback segment, we just do not have enough people listening and sending feedback.
That's true. We do not have a large enough engaged listener base. Is that going to be our resolution? Outshine This American Life. I think that's going to be the goal. Yeah. Take over Welcome to Night Vale's fandom. Actually, I don't really... No.
No.
They're odd.
There's some weirdos in that group.
Yeah. No, let's
stick... I mean, we have weirdos, but at least we know them.
Yeah, let's stick to weirdos we know as opposed to weirdos we don't.
Seriously. Thanks for listening. We totally appreciate it.
And remember, we're not experts.
We're just family.
This is unrelated to anything, but one of the people I follow who reblogs a lot of Bat Family stuff, her tag for DC is Detective Comics Comics, just so you know.
I like it.
Tangential.
You do have to call him Tom Pan Pan.
Oh, I do.
Stella's trying to get that to stick.
Oh, okay. Well, I am here for Stella harassing Tom, so... Okay, I shall. Not for you, but for Stella.
Wrap her up?
I think so.